Deuteronomy chapter 11, and I'm starting at verse 2. Remember today that your children were not the ones who saw and experienced the discipline of the Lord your God, his majesty, his mighty hand, his outstretched arm, the signs he performed and the things he did in the heart of Egypt, both to Pharaoh, king of Egypt, and to his whole country, what he did to the Egyptian army, to its horses and chariots, how he overwhelmed them with the waters of the Red Sea as they were pursuing you, and how the Lord brought lasting ruin on them. It was not your children who saw what he did for you in the wilderness until you arrived at this place, and what he did to Dathan and Abiram, sons of Eliab the Reubenite, when the earth opened its mouth right in the middle of all Israel and swallowed them up with their households, their tents, and every living thing that belonged to them. But it was your own eyes that saw all these great things the Lord has done. Observe, therefore, all the commands I'm giving you today, so that you may have the strength to go in and take over the land that you are crossing the Jordan to possess, and so that you may live long in the land that the Lord swore to your ancestors to give to them and their descendants, a land flowing with milk and honey. The land you are entering to take over is not like the land of Egypt from which you have come, where you planted your seed and irrigated it by foot, as in the vegetable garden. But the land you are crossing the Jordan to take possession of is a land of mountains and valleys that drinks rain from heaven. It is a land the Lord your God cares for. The eyes of the Lord your God are continually on it from the beginning of the year to its end. So if you faithfully obey the commands I'm giving you today, to love the Lord your God and to serve him with all your heart and with all your soul, then I will send rain on the land in its season, both autumn and spring rains, so that you may gather in your corn, new wine and olive oil. I will provide grass in the fields for your cattle, and you will eat and be satisfied. Be careful, or you will be enticed to turn away and worship other gods and bow down to them. Then the Lord's anger will burn against you, and he will shut the heavens so it will not rain on the ground, and the ground will yield no produce, and you will soon perish from the good land the Lord is giving you. Fix these words of mine in your hearts and minds. Tie them as symbols on your hands and bind them on your foreheads. Teach them to your children, talking about them when you sit at home and when you walk along the road, when you lie down and when you get up. Write them on the door frames of your houses and on your gates, so that your days and the days of your children may be many in the land that the Lord swore to give your ancestors, as many as the days that the heavens are above the earth. If you carefully observe all these commands I'm giving you to follow, to love the Lord your God, to walk in obedience to him and to hold fast to him, then the Lord will drive out all these nations before you, and you will dispossess nations larger and stronger than you. Every place where you set your foot will be yours. Your territory will extend from the desert to Lebanon, and from the river Euphrates to the Mediterranean Sea. No one will be able to stand against you. The Lord your God, as he promised you, will put the terror and fear of you on the whole land wherever you go. See, I am setting before you today a blessing and a curse. The blessing if you obey the commands of the Lord your God that I'm giving you today. The curse if you disobey the commands of the Lord your God and turn from the way that I command you today by following other gods which you have not known. When the Lord your God has brought you into the land you are entering to possess, you are to proclaim on Mount Gerizim the blessings and on Mount Ebal the curses. As you know, these mountains are across the Jordan, westward, toward the setting sun, near the great trees of Moreh and the territory of those Canaanites living in the Arabah, in the vicinity of Gilgal. You are about to cross the Jordan to enter and take possession of the land your God is giving you. When you have taken it over and are living there, be sure that you obey all the decrees and laws I am setting before you today.
Sarah, thank you very much for reading that. Please do keep that open in front of you. We're going to be looking at that together, and that will be really useful. If you've got it there, you can check what I'm saying and see where I'm looking in the Bible. That's Deuteronomy chapter 11 on page 189 of the Church Bibles, and on to page 190. And there's the title, How Can I Be Sure About Eternal Life? It's an important thing to be sure about, isn't it? To be certain about. It's not really enough to assume the worst or hope for the best for life after death. To say, well, you know, some people say, well, there probably isn't any such thing as life after death. But if there is such a thing, then I'm guessing I'll probably be fine. Well, probably, is it enough to feel that unsure, to be talking about maybe and hopefully? There are some things that are important enough to want to be certain about in life. Did I bring my passport when I left the house to go to the airport? Well, maybe, I hope so, who knows? I'll take it or leave it. Did I put fuel into the car, or is it going to break down on the fast lane of the motorway? Who knows, we'll just have to wait and see. But I'm an optimistic kind of person, I don't let these things really worry me. Did I remember to put my children in the car, or are they still at home? Wondering what's happening. I don't need to turn around and look in the back of the car. It's all right. I'm relaxed. I'm happy with uncertainty. We wouldn't do that because some things matter, and they matter enough to be certain about and sure about. And eternal life is one of those things. Eternity is a very long time. And that's why we're here today for a baptism. Here is Sam, looking cute and lively, as ever. And his parents want to be sure, about a lot of things in his life. They want to be sure that he's got enough food and that he's healthy and that he gets a proper education and that he is well looked after and loved. And one thing they won't want to leave out, I know they don't want to leave out, is eternal life. Baptism doesn't guarantee that. It's only a first step. It's not enough on its own. It's a great place to start. But it's not enough to be sure of eternal life. So how then can we be sure? How can we be sure for Samuel? How can we be sure for ourselves? Jesus gives us a simple answer to that question. He says in John 15, he says, remain in my love. We were thinking about the love of Jesus earlier when I was talking about baptism, how he died for us so that we can have eternal life. That's how much he loved us and wanted us to receive that. He was willing to die for us so that we can be forgiven by God and loved forever. But the question for us is, are we going to stick with that? Are we going to remain in that love? Are we going to continue in it, or are we going to turn away from it? You see, Jesus says that someone who remains in his love will also want to love him. They know that Jesus has loved them, so they want to love in response to that. And if they really love Jesus, they will also want to obey him. It won't be something reluctant or difficult. It will be something that they want to do out of love, to obey Jesus. Here is where Jesus speaks about that in John 15, verses 9 and 10. He says, now remain in my love. If you keep my commands, you will remain in my love. If we love Jesus, we will want to keep his commands and obey him, because we know that he has loved us. And that's why our Bible reading this morning from Deuteronomy is so very important. It is all about helping us to continue to stay in that love of Jesus Christ, to be sure about eternal life, and to be sure that we have it. If you're here for the first time today, you've joined us for the final episode, the final installment in a sort of series that we've been doing. We've been looking in our home groups and in our Sunday morning sermons at this speech, this passionate speech in the Old Testament from the greatest leader, one of the greatest leaders they had, Moses. Moses is about to die. It's a key turning point in the history of the nation. He's handing on to the next generation. He gathers this crowd together and he says, here is what you need above all. You need to keep loving God. Keep loving him so much that you obey his every command in response to all that God has done for you. And only then can you be sure to be with him forever. So how can we be sure? Well, I think Moses tells us that as he comes to the end of this part of his speech in chapter 11 as he comes to the end of the he's about to come on to the how to obey from chapter 12. This has been about why obey. He's coming to the end of that now. Three ways that we can be sure that come out of this chapter of Moses. And the first is we can be sure because of all God did for us in the past. Because of all God did for us in the past. We can look back at the great and powerful things that God did to rescue us and save us, and things that were seen and were witnessed and were recorded, and that can make us sure. So chapter 11, verse 2, that was on page 189. Chapter 11, verse 2. Remember today, says Moses, remember today that your children were not the ones who saw and experienced the discipline of the Lord your God, his majesty, his mighty hand, his outstretched arm, the signs he performed and the things he did in the heart of Egypt, both to Pharaoh, king of Egypt, and to his whole country, what he did to the Egyptian army, to its horses and chariots, how he overwhelmed them with the waters of the Red Sea as they were pursuing you, and how the Lord brought lasting ruin on them. And then if you skip down to verse 5, it was not your children who saw, verse 7, but it was your own eyes that saw all these great things the Lord has done. Your children didn't see these things happen. They weren't there. Future generations won't know about this unless you tell them, because you're the ones who saw with your own eyes all these things. And you need to make sure that what you have seen is passed down to them so that they too will know that these things are certain and real. And he's reminding them of amazing things that God has been doing for Israel. He saved them in powerful ways, unforgettable ways. Here's a map that we've been looking at that tells the story a little bit. God took them out of Egypt, that arrow coming out of Egypt. The Israelites were being oppressed and mistreated as slaves in Egypt, their children thrown in the river. God said to the king of Egypt, let my people go. They refused to do that, but the greatest human empire of that time rejected and fought against God, but they didn't stand a chance against God. God's enormous power overcame them. And there are a lot of amazing things that God did at that time. One of them is especially famous. You might have seen it portrayed in lots of movies over the years. It really lends itself to special effects. It must have been an incredible thing to see. Here's one of the more recent portrayals of it. Moses, commanded by God, part the Red Sea, and the people of Israel, a sea separates, the people of Israel go through safely, and the enemies, the oppressors, the Egyptian army chasing behind them, but the water crashes down on them to prevent it. It must have been an incredible sight. Can you imagine what it would be like to see that with your own eyes? You would be sure, you would be certain about God's great power. And Moses is saying other people need to hear what you saw, because they won't get to see. God did this once and for all to rescue the people of Israel for good, and they're not going to see it. They're going to need to hear that you saw and hear what you saw. And that makes Israel sure. Now, God has done even greater things since then for his people. A bigger salvation, a greater rescue, a bigger exodus or Passover. A parting not of the Red Sea, but a parting of death itself to open the way into life. And that's what we're going to be celebrating at Easter, on Easter Sunday in a few weeks' time. It's had a huge impact on the world. It caused Christianity to spread around the world and still be celebrated today. And that is because people saw it and recorded it. Jesus said to them, look, not everyone is going to get to see me alive again after I die. You people in this generation, Jesus' followers, sometimes large crowds of them, you get to see Jesus. You get to see that he died and that he rose again, that he can defeat death. And death is not the end, that Jesus has that power. They got to see it, and they are told, look, future generations won't see this, so make sure they hear about what you saw. And we have that. We have their words, their accounts, their letters preserved for us and included in the Bible and spread around the world and passed down for many generations. And it can make us sure. If we're not convinced, if we wonder what might happen to us after we die, it is worth taking a look again and again at the good news from the eyewitnesses that Jesus rose from the dead, and he is able to do the same for us. How can I be sure of eternal life? Well, because of all God did for us in the past. And then secondly, Moses is saying, because of all God promises us for the future. We can be sure by trusting God's good promises, his guarantees, that he is the one who brings about eternal life. He doesn't leave it to us to fix the world ourselves. He is the one who gives us that future with him. So chapter 11, verse 8, if I could pick up from there, from the next little paragraph, chapter 11, verse 8. Observe, therefore, all the commands I'm giving you today, so that you may have the strength to go in and take over the land you are crossing the Jordan to possess, and so that you may live long in the land that the Lord swore to your ancestors to give to them and their descendants, a land flowing with milk and honey. Moses is saying, keep loving God, keep obeying God. Why? So that you may have the strength to go into the promised land. They wouldn't have that strength without God. They would not be able to make their own way into the promised land and get rid of their enemies. They need God's strength to bring that about. And God gives them a land that, why does he give it to them? Well, because he swore it to their ancestors. It's a promise that God made. It's not a response to them. It's not saying, well, you guys are great. You've lived wonderful lives. Here's a reward. Now, this is something God promised before they were even born to their ancestors. He said, look, this is what I'm going to do for your descendants. And so it is all God's doing and not their doing. It is a good land, and it is a land, end of verse 9, a land flowing with milk and honey. I don't know how you feel about milk and honey. Maybe you've got more exciting things planned for your celebration after the baptism, or maybe you're having a Mother's Day dinner. Or you're just going to treat yourself at home. Maybe it will be Easter chocolate that you're going to eat early. I don't know what it is that excites you, but these people had been traveling through the desert for 40 years. It had been a long time since they'd enjoyed milk and honey. And it was an enticing thought that this land was flowing with it. Not that it was going to be really hard work and down to them to bring it about. It's just there and available and flowing. And that's what Moses goes on to say in verse 10, the land that you're entering to take over is not like the land of Egypt from which you come, where you planted your seed and irrigated it by foot, as in a vegetable garden. But the land you're crossing the Jordan to take possession of is a land of mountains and valleys that drinks rain from heaven. It is a land the Lord your God cares for. The eyes of the Lord, your God, are continually on it from the beginning of the year to its end. There's provision of good things all through the year because God provides them in this land. Very different from their experience in Egypt. In Egypt, they were the slaves. They were the workers. They had to do all the farming. You know, the River Nile goes through Egypt, and then you've got all that desert around it. And if you want to do any farming, you've got to get the water from the river into the desert and turn it into a farm. And it is hard work, and they knew it. I mean, the Egyptians hadn't been doing the hard work. They made the Israelites do it. And everything they ate, they had to work hard for. And God says, but I'm giving you a promised land where I will provide for you. It's just there to enjoy, provided in a flowing and generous way. Now, later on in the Bible, this promise of God just builds and builds and grows and grows. Instead of being a promise to just one nation, to Israel, it becomes a promise for all nations. People from every nation are invited to enjoy it. Instead of being a promise for one part of the world, one patch of land, it becomes a promise for the whole world, for the whole universe, for the whole of creation. And Jesus is saying God is going to restore that and put that right. And he's saying it's not going to be like it was before you knew Jesus, where you only get something if you work for it. It's not going to be like that. You know, in this life, you work hard for every little thing that you have. And no matter how hard you work, you never really feel like you've quite got everything that you needed. We work hard to fight illness and cancer and poverty and to get enough income for security. And it's never going to be enough to make this world right and good so that we can just stop and rest. But God gives us eternal life as a free gift, not because of anything we do, but because of his generous and loving promises. And it is a wonderful gift. It depends on him and not on us. Free flowing and good. So we can be sure. We can be sure of eternal life because of all God promises us for the future. And then finally, we can be sure because of all God urges us. Whoops, for all God urges us for today. What have I done there? Oh, there we go. You might as well see the pictures. I didn't show them. There's a map. Let's finish off the map. God leads them into the promised land and says, look in, there it is. You're going to enjoy all of this. Moses is speaking to them just at that turning point, just they're about to turn and enter the land and cross over the river. There's a picture of milk and honey to whet your appetite for all the good things that God promises. How can I be sure about eternal life? All God promises us for the future. And then thirdly, all God urges us for today. The rest of this chapter is Moses urging the people. We can be sure if we do as God is urging us and persuading us to do. If we choose him. If we choose to love and obey him with all our hearts in this life, we can be sure. Chapter 11, verse 13. Excuse me. Verse 13. So if you faithfully obey the commands I'm giving you today. The commands I'm giving you today. This is Moses saying, now I'm giving you these commands. I'm giving you them today. To love the Lord your God and to serve him with all your hearts and with all your soul. Moses is going to give a lot of commands. Chapter 12 to chapter 26. The Bible has a lot to say to us about every area of our lives. How to please God, how to live for Jesus. But really there's only one command. And it's there for us in verse 13. To love God from the heart, our whole lives, our whole soul, everything. Totally devoted to God. And that is a top priority. That is what... I'm sorry, maybe Justine wouldn't mind just grabbing me a glass of water for everyone's benefit. Sorry about this. I hope it's not distracting you too much to listen to me croaking away. Oh, there we go. Rob's beaten you. Sorry, Justine. Thank you. That's great. Sorry about that. So Moses is saying, be totally devoted to God. And that is why it's a top priority, a high priority for people to pass that on to their families, to their children. And he goes on straight away to say, look, this is, above all, this is what you want your children to be knowing about. You want them to love God from the heart. So chapter 11, verse 18. Fix these words of mine in your hearts and minds. Tie them as symbols on your hands and bind them on your foreheads. Teach them to your children, talking about them when you sit at home and when you walk along the road, when you lie down and when you get up. Fix the words of God in your hearts and minds. Make sure they stick there. And don't slip away from your hearts and minds. And make sure they stick in your children's hearts and minds too. Take every opportunity to help that sink in with the next generation. He says in verse 19, be chatting and talking about it at home and on the road. So be talking about it as you're washing up, as you're watching TV on those car journeys when you're dropping people or collecting people, when you go shopping together. Be talking about life and everything and decisions, but be talking about God too. Verse 19, talk about it when you get up and when you lie down at breakfast time. Take a few moments at breakfast if you can manage that in your house and say to everyone, well, what have you been reading in the Bible since yesterday morning? And can you share that with us and tell us about that? As you go to bed, the bedtime stories, it's great to read Harry Potter or whatever it is, but some Bible as well. Read that if you're at bedtime story stage. In any way that you can. Louise was really helpful telling us earlier how our children see who we really are at 2 a.m. in the morning, as she put it. And they see and they hear our real attitudes to all the things that we're watching on TV and all the discussions that come up as we go shopping or as we drive together and have a family meal. And let's fill that with love for God. How does God see these things we're talking about? What would it look like? How has God loved us, and what would it look like for us to love him in response? Let's not miss an opportunity for that. I went to a parents' evening recently. Teachers give lots of advice about how to make sure that children take all the learning opportunities. They say, you know, you go shopping, get your children to do the maths and pay for it and practice their times tables while you're waiting for a bus, and get your kind of GCSE or A-level revision cards and be going through them in any, you've got 5 minutes before dinner, why don't you do that? It's great advice. It's great advice for French and biology and times tables, but those things will only get you so far in life, won't they? I mean, they'll get you a few certificates, a few exams, and maybe they'll get you a better job and maybe a bit more income. Maybe your house will be just slightly bigger if you were good at times tables when you were younger, or maybe not. And then you're going to die. But hearing how much God has loved us and letting it sink in how much we can love him, that doesn't stop when we die. Makes all the difference when we die. And that's why what Moses is saying here. He's saying, make this your top priority in life, to pass this on and to keep this in your own hearts. And he gives the reason in the next sentence, verse 21, why go to all that trouble? Well, verse 21, so that your days and the days of your children may be many in the land that the Lord swore to give your ancestors, as many as the days that the heavens are above the earth. So that they would live long in the future that God had for them. So they'd enjoy it for a long time, for many, many days. So many days, in fact, as many days as the sky will be above the ground. That many days, forever. Moses is saying, make sure this life that you are receiving today is eternal life. And make sure by sticking with God's love. He's saying, look, here's an important choice. Here's the biggest choice you're going to make. He sets out the choice in verse 26. See, I am setting before you today a blessing and a curse. The blessing if you obey the commands of the Lord your God that I'm giving you today. The curse if you disobey the commands of the Lord your God and turn from the way that I command you today by following other gods which you have not known. Here are the choices, blessing or curse. Blessing, that's a Bible word for God's love, his approval, his generosity, his kindness. An attitude from God where he just wants to give us everything. The way that he gave generously at creation, his blessing. But there's the other option, and that is called a curse. It's the Bible word for what happens when we forget and reject and ignore God. And find some alternative, some substitute to live for instead of God. And then he says, well, we are facing God's judgment, his right and fair justice, his anger, his disapproval of all that is evil and harmful and rebellious. And those are the two options for us. Blessing, curse. God's love, God's judgment, life, death. And that is, God is setting that before us. Moses set that before them. Here's your choice, he said. We've been facing and talking about big choices about the future recently. On Friday, crowds gathered in Parliament Square and protested to urge the importance of leaving the European Union and protesting that it hasn't already happened yet. The previous weekend, presumably different people, but just as many, marched across London to urge for a different outcome for our future and to ask that we stay in the European Union. Politicians have been negotiating and debating how to go about this. I think it's about 1,000 days, I gather, since the referendum, longer than it takes to build the Titanic or the Eiffel Tower or to fly to Mars and back again. And they are doing that. We are talking about this because people feel it's important. They're passionate about this because they think a lot hangs on this. This is our future. This matters. But it is a decision that is nowhere near as important as the one God sets out before us today. And he sets this decision out before us every day of our lives when we hear him speak. And he says, well, which way are you going to go? Will you remain in the love of Jesus? And will you love him and choose him and make him your greatest concern and your greatest motivation? Will you choose life? or will you choose death?